in.
You want me to clap?
Yeah, you can clap.
3, 2, 1.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Still We Persist, episode 2. Today, we'll be talking about healing justice. My name is Tamara Lash, and I'm the Aya Woman of Color graduate assistant, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Sienna Kasky. I'm the Aya leadership liaison, and I use she and her pronouns.
I would also like to give a shout out to my grandma. Today would have been her 70th birthday. Mm. So, Sherry Lynn Fernandez, I love you, and I feel you here today.
Mm. And today's episode will be on the topic of healing justice, like Tamara said. And we have an amazing person here today. Charlene Martinez serves as the Associate Director of Integrative Learning for Student Experiences and Engagement at Oregon State University. And Charlene has 18 years of professional experience working across multicultural centers and student affairs programs at Oregon State University, Sacramento State, Mills College, Contra Costa College, UC San Diego, and as well as a nonprofit, the Rockwood Leadership Program. She is the co-founder of OSU's Multiracial Aikido, a social justice retreat for participants to unpack multiraciality and develop their agency as emerging leaders. Oof. She received her master's degree in education with an emphasis in multicultural counseling from the community-based Block program at San Diego State University. And her bachelor's degree in global studies with an emphasis in culture and ideology from UC Santa Barbara. Charlene infuses cultural organizing, emergent strategies, and storytelling in experiential learning programs and initiatives. And she's my mentor. But Charlene is amazing and is like way more amazing beyond your bio. And we're gonna talk to you about healing justice. Mm. You excited?
I'm super excited. Yay. I use she, her pronouns for everyone out there. And I'm so honored to be here. There really aren't any words, just the feeling of gratitude and immense pride for the amount of work that all the people have contributed, who've contributed to Aya to get to this point. So I just want to say thank you for having me. I'm tearing up already.
Who knew this would happen?
We knew it. So thank you. Thank you for having me. It is a real pleasure to be here.
Okay, we're gonna get right into it. Let's do it. Our first question is, how did you come to Women of Color work and organizing?
So, let's see, the great stories. I feel like I wanted to start with my time in college at UC Santa Barbara, but as I started thinking about really how did I get into Women of Color organizing, it predates college. I think about the struggle of my mother as an immigrant who came from Taiwan when she was 25. I think about my grandmother, Elsa Castellar Martinez, who she immigrated when she was well into her older years. And I think about all the things that they had to endure and resist and persist through. And that included things like, you know, bumping up against things like assimilation and acculturation and wanting the best for your family and survivorship and all those things. And so I think about that I came to realize women of color activism when I started to investigate more into my past, which was trying to understand their stories and their legacies. And then, of course, bumping up against, like, I don't know, hegemony and racism and all the things that come along with, you know, living in the society. And so it made, when I went to UC Santa Barbara and I started getting involved in activism, and lo and behold, there's a lot of women of color activists who I found myself connected to because that's who was really involved in a lot of the campaigns. It made it really easy and accessible to come together because we were all suffering through our experience at UC Santa Barbara. And it wasn't a predominantly white, well, it was predominantly white campus at the time as well. But the students of color finding each other, and then within that, the niche of women of color and gender nonconforming folks like coming together and really asking critical questions. And I think in that, there was something really beautiful that was birthed in me that knew that to survive and for hope, I needed to make sure that I found people. So I don't know if organizing was like a strategy at first. It was really just about surviving a campus. And then I think later, once I felt a sense of power in that, in being connected, and telling our stories more vocally and visibly, then it felt like organizing. Mm. I learned a lot in those years at UC Santa Barbara. I had mentioned to you, Sienna, earlier in the week that my first conference that I ever went to was a critical resistance conference, mm-hmm. where I saw Angela Davis giving a keynote.
Yeah. Casual.
Right? You know.
In BT.
I think I was 18 or 19.
Oh, wow.
You know, those plants, awesome. Those little plants of, these little seedlings were the people I was listening to. Mm-hmm. There were things I was surrounded by, things I was interested in reading, mm-hmm. because they were speaking to my existence in a way that no one else had done before. Mm. So.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for sharing a little piece of history.
That's beautiful. Like something that you touched on that kind of connects back to what we talked about last week, mm. is finding, you knew what woman of color organizing or feminism was pre-coming to college, mm-hmm. through your lineage. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I brought up last week, and like thinking through the importance of, it's nice to have language to name what we're doing, but recognizing that our experiences are just as important,
yeah.
and we know. Like, we know before we know.
Yeah.
Just because of what we're living through. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And important to name and, yeah. like, give space and recognize who was before us and the way in which they impacted us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think that's the most beautiful part of, like, women of color organizing, is that we have so much history to us that we can just use it and, like, learn from it, but add to it. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, constantly evolving, mm-hmm. which I think is beautiful.
Yeah. I want to put a disclaimer out there that, like, things that I say or I might say in this talk, if I don't cite or attribute it to people, it's because either the name escapes me or because it's now become part of me. It's like a vernacular in me. But I just want to say that I don't feel like anything I'm going to say is new. Mm-hmm. But I'm just kind of connecting the dots in different ways for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm inspired daily by all kinds of incredible people, but let's be real, mainly feminists and women of color.
Yeah, true. That's why we're here.
Exactly. So our next question is, what does your practice look like, and how is healing justice incorporated?
Mm. So in the stories that I was telling about how I came to understand myself as an activist, I think, again, the piece around waking up, knowing that, waking up and feeling upset, feeling angry, right, was a feeling that I was having. Mm. And I didn't know at that time how to maintain myself.
Mm.
It just felt like that was the way that I needed to vocalize the story or the story of others, and it felt like the right thing to do at the time. And I burned out really quickly. Like, by my junior year, I literally defected. And when I say that, I don't mean that lightly. Like, some of my dearest friends that I still keep in contact to this day always talk about sort of the gap year that I had inside the during my time on college, where they're like, what happened to you, right? And I didn't have words for it. I just knew I was tired. I was tired of fighting in a very particular way. And so I kind of went on, like, you know, inside college sabbatical around activism. But what happened for me then was I got to clarify what I needed, and I needed to go abroad, and I needed to expand my horizons, and I needed to figure out what my next steps were. And I think that kind of characterizes how I understand healing justice in my lifetime. So when I get connected, I go inward, and I realize what I need or what I don't have. And then I find strategies, and I'm literally grabbing for them. You know, you all know my bookshelf is like chock filled with just like stuff. And it's because my strategy is, I don't think I have all the answers, but I know other people have been looking for them as well. And so, you know, that led me to my grad program, which was, I had already been in multicultural affairs for a couple years, and doing work with lots of students of color who would come to my office and they would just start crying. And I'd be like, oh, I thought I was here to like run programs, not like feel the tears. And I didn't know what to do. So I went to go find a program to help me with the tools for multicultural counseling in that.
Mm-hmm.
The requirement was to have a therapist
wow.
in the program.
Wow.
because you were not ethically allowed to see clients unless you yourself were being cared for and seen. But that was a profound insertion for, I was doing all this critical social justice work and realizing that if I didn't take care of myself, my mental health, that I would be no good to anybody else who was around me. And so I started to clarify and have words for that, that gap that I took in college, that I didn't have anything to help me kind of give me the resources and tools. So for me, healing justice does come from a liberatory frame that without the joy, there's no purpose in doing this work. But to get to the joy, I have to realize that pain and work through that pain and find ways and strategies to deal with that pain. Sometimes it's listening to Chani Nicholas or, you know, being on the Instagram and like, you know, or getting on CoStar and taking it to the metaphysical, astrological planes. Sometimes that's following my heart when I go to different conferences and not necessarily choosing the one that I think I'm supposed to be at, but the one that speaks to me that I need. You know, so it's like an everyday choices, figuring out what I need and how and when. I'll say that the practice changes, has changed over time. Many people are familiar with the struggles I've had here in Corvallis, and I'm happy to say that I've survived and I'm thriving in my, my going on eighth year. That's a big deal. How'd I get here? Interventions, many, many interventions. On the physical and spiritual plane, for me, it's been yoga. I know that's a super contested and appropriative practice, but I do it with intention, as much intention as I can, and I have taken it on as a way for me to connect with myself. And so I don't need to explain it to anybody else, but I need to be aware and critical, and then I also need to embrace the fact that it is the one thing that my body responds to, where I feel deeply at peace. With myself. To other strategies like carving out more time and attention for my children, because they're 6 and 8 and they are little girls that really need their mama. And I didn't realize how much they needed their mama because I was going through so much. And then, but knowing that, I carve out more intentionally, all right, I'm gonna stay late these days, I'm gonna say no these days. Or work from home these moments, because I wanna be there to tuck them in. Or other strategies, like I didn't have what I needed in a community at a time here, so I sought it elsewhere. And I went to the U.S. Department of Arts and Culture, and they had a learning community that nurtured cultural organizing, which for those who don't know is like the intersection between arts and activism. And I belonged to a cohort, a learning community of 30 people who were doing this work in isolation all across the nation. And then it brought me to a place of not feeling alone anymore. And then I took those strategies of story circles. And we started employing them here at OSU with students. And that started building of these other seeds. So I feel like, you know, it's this reciprocal process for me. Healing justice is about listening to myself, what I need for healing, giving back, planting those seeds, and then allowing them to kind of come up in different ways. Because without the joy, we have I don't have anything that I can anchor myself to. Because I refuse to be angry all the time, so.
Dang.
Yeah. Wow. Drop the mic.
Right? I just
throw
heard that.
Throw it off. Yeah. I'm like, holy cow.
Did the healing, like, after the arts and like learning community, was this where the healing cards came out of?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about
the
healing cards?
Sure. So we'll open up the deck and see. We'll see what we draw. Maybe you'll draw one.
Oh, I'll draw it.
I love this.
Blossom.
And beauty.
Oh, and look what I found.
Curses, love it.
So the story behind these healing cards, so I learned about the story circles from U.S. Department of Arts and Culture, shout out to y'all, who developed this toolkit called People State of the Union, where they were getting stories basically all over the nation and have thousands and thousands of stories in this repository. And they literally type them up and track them. We didn't necessarily track all the stories in our story circles, but we started using the protocol many different spaces. I taught it to students, mm-hmm. and then they used it in an internship program called Promise, and with the actual president of the Oregon State University, Ed Ray. And we used it in town halls, the Latinx town hall. Oscar Montemayor used it. Rest in Power. Mm-hmm. It ended up showing up in different places, and we centralized it with the student staff team of Integrated Learning for Social Change, which was in DCE, Diversity and Cultural Engagement at the time. And those students then took it off, and they did it. They would use the story circles in programs in the Art Center in Corvallis, mm-hmm. and they would plant it in the Cultural Resource Centers. Mm-hmm. And concurrently, other students who were in my Arts and Social Justice class, actually two students, Nite Verdugo and Maisie Yang, also women of color, they brought together in one of their projects in that class the Latinx community and the Hmong community, I believe, into a story circle about assimilation and acculturation. Mm. So all these story circles started popping up because the students realized that it was an easy protocol to begin to connect and build bridges in unsuspecting places. Mm-hmm. As a part of the story circles, we invited people to centralize a value around healing. And the students themselves chose these words. And then they drew an image that corresponded to the word. So this one here is of the Eye of Fern, and I wonder if it was Mick and I who did this, but who knows? Because mm-hmm. Now it's pretty just sort of prolific in the out there. And then we turned them into a whole deck of cards. So all these cards come from stories. Oh, look, here's yours.
That's mine. Oh.
It's like a deck of chocolates right here. All these come from stories, and these values are about what people wanted to center in their healing. Nourish, inheritance, ritual, creativity, appreciate, belonging. So this process started to give back in different ways. So it was a healing piece, it was a connection piece, there were some story pieces, kind of wove all the components of what I've talked about kind of together in such a profound way that we didn't even know. Like, we didn't come up with the idea of, like, let's do the healing cards when mm-hmm. we started telling the circles. Mm-hmm. No, the cards came out of our process. Mm. And somebody decided, oh, wait, no, that was me. I decided. So I was inspired by the Asian American Lit Review. They created a deck of cards called Asian Americans in Mental Health. And they created a card for every issue area in Asian Americans and mental health. Mm. And so they took a static report and they turned it into a deck of cards. And I was like, that's smart, I'm gonna do that. And so we took these cards and we developed a deck of healing cards. So on the back, there's these beautiful reflection questions. And this one says, in what ways do you continue to grow in difficult times? Mm. What persists long after it's gone? How are we like ferns? So this is now a reflective piece, it's a healing piece, so many pieces, and so many people contributed to this. It's not my thing, it was a student-driven thing. It was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a student who, like, got to engage in this, I think when Marwa and Hunter, like, brought them into the CRCs, mm-hmm. I was not taking care of myself in the ways that mm-hmm. I needed to, and the prompts that they were giving us to think through mm-hmm. really started that process for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh shit, like, I'm not feeling well, and maybe mm-hmm. I'm not feeling well because I'm not engaging in healing practices. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking time for myself. I'm not eating well. I'm not drinking enough water. Yep. And also this idea that my community all needed to come from one place. Mm. So, like, I was leaning only on, like, Women and Gender Center staff. Mm. And so what does it mean to, like, only be leaning on Women and Gender Center staff and not have any support elsewhere? Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate, again, like, what you talked about in finding community and finding space in other areas mm-hmm. that may not be Oregon State University mm-hmm. yeah. and the importance of doing that mm-hmm. And also the diversity of thought that brings into the room mm-hmm. and so you have, like, so many different people thinking different things mm-hmm. and finding healing in new places is so important mm-hmm. And leaving Corvallis and coming back, it allows me to have a different relationship with the space mm-hmm. like the physical land of Corvallis and the people mm-hmm. around So I like that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I remember when I was a freshman, I was given an award at the integrated learning, like it's the your last kickoff or end of the year event, and you came up to me and you were like, pick a card to take. And I got the persist card.
Oh my gosh.
My freshman year, yeah, I did. And look where I am now.
No.
I'm not kidding. It's literally on my mirror in my room.
That's
and
so great.
I've kept it with me for all these years.
I love that I don't remember that moment.
It's okay.
But I so love that
I remember you.
Remember
I remember Aww. You like pick a card. And I was like a wee freshman coming to the end of spring term, my first year, which was a difficult one. And I got that and I was like, persist. Cool. And I had no idea what Aya, I don't even think I knew what Aya was at the time. But then the next year I was the Women and Gender Center leadership liaison, and then I met Tamara, and then I'm persisting, and now we're here for Stoic Persist, which who knows what's gonna happen.
How does it feel to come full circle? This?
Yeah.
This is like a really,
right? Yeah.
Wow.
It feels, I mean, I like to, I don't know, it feels good. It feels like I was meant to be here and like do this work and meet all these amazing people. And I think, I don't think it's come full circle yet. I think I still got more things that to happen. Because I like to, a need that I have is to a need to like never finish. I don't ever want to stop doing anything. But it feels good. It's like little reminders like this that I'm like, oh, you're supposed to be doing what you're doing, Sienna. So, and now you're my mentor. And I should have told you that earlier, but yeah, it feels good. I feel really supported.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Actually, so one of the philosophies that you have around unfinishedness, so I am going to cite somebody right now, Antonia Dardare is an educator and philosopher, and she actually wrote The Pedagogy of Hope. So it's a counter to, it's a continuing on from Ferrari's piece of Pedagogy of Oppressed. And in her latest work, I think it was released this year, she talks about sort of critical leadership for social justice. And in that, there's one of the tenets of what we need to do to persist right now, and it's to hold the complexity of being in a state of unfinishedness, that actually will help us. Because if we ever think that we're done, then that somehow we've closed the door on something, we're moving on, and not in the way of like, you know, experiences and things like that, but just like in the notion of completion around justice, then we're not gonna hold space for more additional hope. And hope is what drives us to continue to look for joy and to find purpose and community and things like that. So
thanks for sharing
just
that.
Just put that back
in there. I think I'm trying to think of like what last question I wanna ask you. And I think I'm gonna pull from our Women of Color Wednesday.
Oh my gosh, get it.
List. Like, what's your vision for Women of Color organizing? And like, what's your hope?
Well, you all know I love vision questions, but
I
was not prepared for this.
I know you were.
I'm a cheat a little bit, because I really love the work of emergent strategy. I found a lot of solace in the work of what Adrienne Marie Brown ended up collecting, because she's collecting a lot of different voices in that book. But one of the tenets is the notion of adaptation or emergence and moving with the fluidity of what is, right? And so my vision, which I think is the vision of a huge collective of people, is to continue to be open to changing and moving and thriving and expanding the circle of inclusion and belonging. And even if we're challenged by that, I think that we need to figure out how to build the bridges, but not if we're not whole and not if people are trying to take us out. And so it's finding moving along with the waves and finding those communities of support to tap different people and to tap yourself in, to be ready to run the relay with people who we might not want to connect with. And so I think it's flow, adaptation, finding those spaces that nourish us, and continuing to persist. Yeah. But at the end of the day, like finding the things that make you most whole, mm-hmm. to continue to do the work, and that looks so different for so many people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you so much for coming and dropping mics of wisdom on us.
Oh yeah. I'm incredibly thankful to share this space with mm-hmm. you and to learn with you and you, Sienna. I'm also like still so shocked that you drew that card. Like I can't, like I know at the beginning my mouth was open as you were reading Charlene's thing because I was just like, holy hell, Charlene, how have you done so much?
Yeah.
And then you told that story and again, I'm pretty sure I like my jaw dropped. And so I've been shook this whole video. Thank you both
for sharing space. That's exactly what I needed to hear right now.
I am like so, like my mouth is sort of open and like just perplexed of like how magical this process has been, mm-hmm. and that we continue to find connection mm-hmm. in all these different ways. So it was purposeful, all of it. And mm-hmm. I am inspired by you. I think actually, if I could like take back everything I said about the vision for Women of Color Organizing, let me just say that I think the vision is you, like really, truly. Mm.
I'm not good crying.
Thanks.
Thank you, Charlene.
We can cry. I'm here for it.
Yes.
Why not? So to kind of bring us back together and ground ourselves, let's take one collective deep breath. Breathe out. Thank you again, Charlene, for sharing space with us today. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sienna, for being an amazing co-host.
Thank you, Tamara.
And thank you all for watching. Mm-hmm. We will see you next week with Still We Persist. Bye.
Bye.